Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. This is Taking Aim, and I am Steve Woodward. Thanks for joining us again, spending a part of your weekend with us. We have got a lot on the docket this morning. As always, we are overwhelmed with content, and we just have to curate it for you so you get the best of the week that has just concluded. We begin by, as always, by acknowledging our beloved sponsor, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980, your go-to for in-house delicious menu items for breakfast and lunch, soups, salads, handcrafted sandwiches, and then on the catering side, all that you will ever need for intimate office gatherings or the wedding of the century. And I was in the Marketplace earlier this week and enjoyed their delicious Wisconsin cheddar soup. Got to try it. The Marketplace, since 1980. A reminder that coming up on this program will be our guest, Cleta Mitchell. She is the founder and chairman of the Election Integrity Network. She is a citizen of Moore County. She is a confidant of Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States, and a frequent contributor to news programs across the nation. She, of course, was at the ground zero of the 2020 election shenanigans in Georgia, representing the Trump campaign. And now fast forward 6 years, and Cleta Mitchell is leading the charge to force the United States Senate, which, by the way, is Republican-controlled, to pursue a remedy to passing the Save America Act, which, of course, is in her wheelhouse because it's all about voter integrity and photo ID requirements for the privilege of voting in our elections. What could be more fundamental than that? Cleta will be coming up shortly in this program. Public enemy number one always kicks off our show. And, you know, I was thinking about all the different candidates for this dubious distinction this week, public enemy number one. And, of course, you could, you know, you could name any member of the Iranian inner circle. That would be a place to start, I suppose. You could name any number of Democrats up on Capitol Hill. You could certainly name multiple members of the media and all of their anti-American goons. But really, there are stories that are percolating that are very important and that we need to pay attention to, and that's what this program is for. That's what we do. We're taking aim at the at some of the stories that may have eluded you because there's so much coming at you all day, every day. You will recall that several months ago, an investigative reporter emerged named Nick Shirley. Don't call me Shirley. And Nick Shirley is a young man who, of his own volition, went into Minnesota and brick by brick began uncovering the massive fraud that exists in that state, which is largely fueled by Somalians who are, the ultimate fraudsters and have really parlayed the Democrat indifference toward fraud into a multi-million dollar industry for themselves. And we saw the stories up there of the leering centers, the daycare centers and the learning centers where there were no children. The parking lots were empty, and yet somehow they were all getting state and federal subsidies to exist. And that was a pretty big red flag. Well, now fast forward, and I think Nick Shirley's obviously a very smart guy. He's a very determined young reporter. He decided, well, gosh, if it's this bad in Minnesota, it's got to be really bad in some of these other bigger blue states. And so he headed west, young man, to California, and began to poke around in Southern California. And wouldn't you know it, it is a fraud tsunami coming at him. He practically had to wear a fraud wetsuit to keep from being swept away by the tide of corruption. Nick Shirley is back on the ground, this time in Southern California. He's finding, once again, largely Somalian-driven fraud. And again, happening under the nose of Democratic leadership, a Democrat governor, Gavin Newsom. And it's worth keeping in mind that the Democrats would like us to believe that Democrat Gavin Newsom, the governor, is the heir apparent, the man who will be running for president in 2028. And yet his state is a dumpster fire on so many levels. So Nick Shirley goes out to Southern California, and he starts asking questions. And boy, you wouldn't believe what he discovers. Play clip one.
California may have the largest amount of fraud in the country, as California is the state with the highest taxes and collects more money than any other state in America. It is filled with fraud. California's version of Medicaid, called Medi-Cal, has more than doubled since 2022, from $108 billion to a proposed $222 billion in 2026. Their population, however, has not grown exponentially. However, their spending has. There has been a 1,000% increase in hospice care in the Los Angeles County. In fact, one out of every $10 of home health care in America is spent in Los Angeles. On top of that, their government-funded daycare programs are filled with violations. While they continue to give money to these fraudsters, it is estimated that the fraud in California could be in the hundreds of billions of dollars. In this video, we'll be going face to face with these fraudsters, confronting them as they defraud the American taxpayer out of millions and billions of dollars, as they live their lives in luxury, driving around luxurious cars that cost more than $100,000 that you actually paid for. Let's start first by going to these daycares filled with violations that still continue to receive money from the government.
So then Mr. Shirley, he sets the table there, and his initial report out of Southern California is about 40 minutes in length. You can find it on YouTube. I encourage you to go find it and watch it. It's riveting, and it's also very alarming. So then he moseys on down to San Diego, south of L.A., and he starts, as he did in Minnesota, he starts going to individual locations that are purported to be the home of daycare and learning centers. Let's play the next clip, and then we'll come back.
This right here is Hayden Sarah Family Childcare. This is a daycare right here. Apparently, they have 14 children enrolled. Tell us a little bit more about this daycare right here. We're in the middle of the hills here in San Diego.
So, according to state records, when inspectors arrived here, there were 14 kids enrolled, but zero present. And then this place was also cited for having missing children's records and also not having a facility roster.
It's kind of weird that there's this daycare in the middle of a neighborhood. Hello.
I was naked, okay?
No, you weren't.
Oh, I can sue you. I was like, I wasn't dressed up. I'm Muslim.
Either way, can we enroll a child into the daycare?
You don't know what is going on.
Well, it says there's 14 children enrolled here on the state of California. It says there's 14 children enrolled here.
You don't care.
I do care. Then where are the children?
You don't care.
Where are the children at?
It's not enough, Minnesota. You come here.
Where are the children
it's
at? Where are the children at, ma'am? All right, so what she's doing is she's making a video right now. She's going to send it out all to the, like, all the other daycares.
But at the end of the day, enrolled for 14 children, no children here. And this is from the state of California. We're not targeting Somalian population. We're just going after daycares. And it just so happens to be that all the daycares, they are Somalian so far.
That was interesting. This woman was insisting that she was running a daycare, and then she happens to just mention, oh, and by the way, I was completely naked when you arrived. Well, if you're running a daycare while undressed, I think that's another whole story, a separate headline unto itself. But there's a broader version of fraud, a broader, I guess I would call it, category of fraud going on in Southern California that Mr. Shirley also detected, which involved these sort of random hospice and home health care operations, again, in random places, funded by state and federal subsidies without a lot of questions being asked. Let's play the next and final clip.
Seeing all of these hospices pop up here, why is hospice and home health care such a booming business right now?
I think it's become a trend of fraud. Honestly, has. Like, I heard about this about 5 years ago during COVID, that people were building hospices and selling them. It was like a business these people made. So it's an easy, I think, easy way to bill Medicare with their people's beneficiary numbers that people can easily steal and even purchase and buy. They buy numbers from people and tell them, give me your Medicare beneficiary number, and then we'll give you something in return.
And what does that mean, give you my beneficiary number?
So there's an ID that you have. Medicare gives you. Medicare is for anybody 65 and over. So they'll give you a Medicare ID number. And that number is what's used to bill Medicare.
So essentially, if they can get a number from somebody, it's almost like getting a credit card number. And then from there, they can continue to bill and bill and bill and get that Medicare money.
Exactly. It's actually more beneficial than finding a credit card these days. Anybody can get a hospice license, actually. You don't need to be a physician. You don't need to be a doctor. You can apply and get a hospice license in the state of California. They bill. They take the Medicare numbers. They bill Medicare. The Medicare sends them a check right away. It's an easy process.
Yes, apparently it's very easy because not very intelligent people have figured out how to game that system. And wow. So this is only the beginning of his reporting. Imagine what's still to come from Nick Shirley in California. And then he can go to New York, and he can go to other lefty hotbeds. He can go to Colorado, and it's just going to domino. And we're going to be reminded routinely how corrupt the left is, and how willing they are to accommodate these illegal immigrant criminals. You know, the ones who don't come here to rob and kill and rape us, come here to steal our state and federal subsidies without hesitation. It's mind-boggling. Well, folks, Nick Shirley is doing the Lord's work on the streets, uncovering the fraud we just described. But James O'Keefe, now he's sort of the godfather of what Nick Shirley is doing. James O'Keefe is the godfather of the undercover interview, the investigatory diligence of going into digging into organizations to find out where the corruption is and who the criminals are, and of course he's exposed on so many levels, so many people, and he continues to do the work. James O'Keefe, he too finds himself in Los Angeles. And what he decided to look into was what's going on out on the streets with their massive homeless population. Now, some people see a homeless population and they think, oh, how sad, how tragic, what a disgrace. However, others see a homeless population and they find it as a land of opportunity. James O'Keefe, this is somewhat of a longish clip, but I want you to bear with us and listen to what he discovers, not only in terms of collecting signatures for petitions, but also voter registration right there in broad daylight among the homeless. Play clip two.
We walked a few blocks through Skid Row, past the intersection of San Pedro and 6th Street, and almost immediately, to our surprise, we found petitioners who were actually offering homeless people money in exchange for signatures on the ballot petitions. $2, to be exact, in exchange for their signatures.
You got a light, bro? You want a cigarette? You want a cigarette?
$2.
Oh, you can't need 14 signatures.
Oh, what is it for?
Save the park, save the streets, save basically everything to help save the kids.
Nice.
We all do.
What's the name of the group?
Save the Kids Foundation.
Save the Kids Foundation? Is it like voting or is it like
everything?
Notice the $20 bill pinned to this man's shirt. This is a signal to all nearby homeless people that he is a source of the money. Paying citizens to sign petitions is a violation of California Elections Code 18603, which states, quote, every person who offers or gives money or other valuable consideration to another in exchange for his or her signature on a state, county, municipal, or district initiative, referendum, or recall petition is guilty of a misdemeanor.
One cigarette?
Well, I just need one signature right here. You get two cigarettes.
But it wasn't just cash that we saw exchanged for signatures. We also saw the homeless being bribed with cigarettes and even drugs, marijuana. And all of that is considered valuable consideration. And according to the petitioner that we spoke with earlier, it would be a crime just to give out water to anyone who is signing petitions.
Now, you don't give people money to sign it.
That's illegal.
Oh, that's illegal.
I can't even hand out water.
Really? You can't even hand out water? It's very hot in Los Angeles.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's like voter ID. Or no, not voter ID. It's voter fraud, they will call it.
Voter fraud?
Yeah, you're basically enticing somebody. Hey, if you sign all these, I'll give you a free water.
Our undercover journalist continued to engage with this group in Skid Row and found the majority of homeless people who were being paid to sign, as you might expect, didn't even know what it was they were signing.
That's powerful stuff right there, folks. And again, just think, a signature here, a signature there. Just imagine how quickly you can amass a whole voting block of homeless guys just by handing out free cigarettes. They're not even giving them packs of cigarettes. It's one cigarette in exchange for a moment of their valuable time. So James O'Keefe on the story out there and really what is such a broken city, Los Angeles, and it's a tragedy. And again, ladies and gentlemen, let's remember the Democrats are going to tell you that the governor of California, who presides over all this corruption and decay and human decline, is presidential timber. So just keep that in mind when they start banging that over your head in the next couple of years. Before we get to our next segment, I want to quickly do a little housekeeping here and remind you of a few things. First of all, in the week ahead, keep a close eye on the recount activity regarding the race between incumbent North Carolina State Senate President Phil Berger and his opponent, Rockingham County Sheriff Sam Page. After all the dust settled on Election Day, Page held about a 23-vote lead. I mean, it's about as narrow as you can get. And under law, Berger is, because the vote margin is less than 1%, Berger can request various recount activities, and he has done so, not surprisingly. And he is really, I mean, you can tell he's desperate because some of the requests he's making to go back and hand count certain ballots and inspect certain ballots are very, very at the margins. But keep an eye on that. This could be a turning point in the week ahead, and it could be the end of the Berger dynasty and the beginning of a new era with Senator Sam Page. Doesn't that sound good? We'll keep you up to date on that. Also, at the behest of our wonderful More Republican Women's Club, which meets monthly and which is presided over by some of the most energetic and inspiring Republicans in this county, they have asked me to remind you about an organization called the Life Care Pregnancy Center. The Life Care Pregnancy Center of course, is the refuge for women who have decided to have their child, to reject the abortion path, and then after giving them the guidance to go forward and give birth to their child, then they provide them with the care and the love and the services that they need. They'll be celebrating 34 years, the Life Care Pregnancy Center, and they're going to do that on Friday, April 17th, with a reverse raffle event ticket opportunity and other prizes. You can learn all about this fundraiser and how to attend simply by going to the Moore County Republican Women's website, or to the just Google Life Care Pregnancy Center, and you should be able to learn about their plans. It's Friday, April 17th. It's going to be at Twin Fields Farm in Southern Pines. It'll be a 5:30 p.m. event, and we encourage you to get up to speed on what this wonderful organization does for very fragile and vulnerable young women in this community and across the region. Well, we haven't gotten to the next one yet, but it's time. Public embarrassment number one. We go from the enemies to the embarrassing Looney Tunes, and very often we have to choose from within our own ranks sometimes on the conservative side, but this week it's really all about the Democrats have reached the end of their rope in trying to combat the Save America Act, which of course is championed by the President of the United States. And really is so fundamental to maintaining the integrity of our elections. The act would, if passed into law, would require documentary proof of U.S. citizenship for anyone seeking to register to vote. Imagine that. You've got to be a U.S. citizen to vote in the United States. What a concept. And then that being satisfied, going forward, you would always, always, always need to present a photo ID, a valid photo ID issued by a valid organization at your polling place in order to vote. And then there's a third component of this act, which I think is maybe a little bit overlooked and very important. It would require all states to submit their voter rolls to a newly formed DHS Save system, which would identify and remove non-citizens from the rolls going forward. I mean, think what a difference that could make in a short period of time to cleaning up our rolls, which have been, you know, which for years have been corrupted by, you know, dead people, non-U.S. citizens, etc. So the Save America Act is very important, and yet the Republican leadership in Washington, led by leader John Thune, senator from South Dakota, he was at the point where he said, well, look, we can't pass this. You know, we can't get 60 votes because that would require certain numbers of Democrats to come over to the other side, and they're not going to do it, even though it makes a ton of sense. And so Thune was basically ready to throw in the towel and say, we've got other things to do. Let's put this on the back burner. But the American public, which, according to polling, by a margin of more than by a total of more than 80%, supports this act. They started burning up the phone lines at the U.S. Capitol, and that sort of forced the hand of Thune and the Republican leadership to say, okay, I guess we're going to have to do what the Senate is supposed to do and go to the floor and engage in a debate on a very important piece of legislation, which is what has been ongoing in the week that just concluded. And now we are at a crossroads. We are on the brink because there's still no guarantee that the Republicans are going to end up being able to convince Democrats in large enough numbers to hit a 60-vote majority. And it's also very unlikely that there's going to be any kind of a decision to take what they call the nuclear option and make it possible for the bill to pass with 51 votes, which can be done much more easily. But then, of course, once you blow up that 60-vote threshold, then you've opened the door in the future for the Democrats to leverage the same 51 votes to undo a lot of the MAGA legislation and whatever other insane Marxist things they want to try to do. So it's a slippery slope. And then finally, you've got to try to figure out a way to debate this in such a manner that you can get some kind of a compromise. Maybe you don't get everything you want in this bill, but anything would be better than nothing. And that's the way it used to be. We're going to, as I mentioned, have Cleta Mitchell joining us shortly to really dig deep into this story. But I don't think it was explained any more clearly, and the urgency was laid out any more clearly than by Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville, the ex-old ball coach and soon-to-be candidate for governor of Alabama. Tommy Tuberville, play clip three.
This is more of a show week. We can't get it passed, and it's probably one of the most crucial pieces of legislation, single pieces, that we will face. When I go back to Alabama, people look at me as a coach. Please tell me my vote is going to count. Please tell me I'm not going to get canceled out by a non-citizen in this country. And it makes you feel bad. Up here, you know, it's almost a 90% vote from people all over the country, Democrat and Republicans, that, hey, you need to get this passed. You need to be a citizen to vote for our leaders in this country. We can't get anything done. We even have Republicans that are not going to vote for it. Talking filibuster is not going to work. Only way we can do it, we got to bust the filibuster, 51 votes, get this done, pass everything we can for President Trump between now and the election next year, and we can take this country back over. But if we don't get this passed, we are doomed. We will lose the midterms. President Trump will be fighting for his life when it comes to staying in office. It'll be a disaster for the American people and a disaster for the 250th year of our country.
Well, I don't think he could have said it any more plainly. And this is the time. I mean, now is the time to do this. And let's stay on top of our, you know, of our legislators. Now, that's especially an important call to action here in North Carolina, because one of our senators is the lame duck Tom Tillis, and we'll talk with Cleta about him coming up. But Tillis is on the record as saying that this is a waste of time trying to get this bill passed. He belittles his fellow Republicans, saying they're doing nothing more here than swinging for the fences in a desperate attempt to get this done. And he actually didn't even show up for the vote they had to take a vote to say, okay, we're gonna take this debate to the floor. They had to vote just to move forward. And I guess Tom was, you know, they work 2.5 days a week in Washington, and he was trying to get up there for his 2.5 days, and apparently he had a delayed flight. I wonder if that had anything to do with the TSA not being paid and the lines being very long, although he probably goes in through the side door. But I bet he showed an ID to board the flight back to D.C. from, from Charlotte. Anyway, gosh, you can't really make it up. But Tillis is, you know, every chance he gets, he tries to be this big, tough contrarian and the voice of reason. And we'll talk with Cleta coming up about just how that's really getting old, and we're done with it. You know, we're basically done with it. But I would call upon you to contact Tom Tillis, contact Senator Ted Budd, and urge their offices to stay the course on this, and keep pounding away, and maybe even Tillis eventually will take a hint. Certainly, I think Ted Budd is much more liable to take up the MAGA objectives and to stand for these kinds of voter integrity issues as the junior senator. But you know, call them, text, go on their Twitter X accounts and post comments. Use the social media channels to let them know you're out there, and do everything that you can to keep the momentum going and the wind at the backs of our folks, because, you know, there's a hostile Democrat Party. I mean, if you watched any of the hearings this past week with, you know, the confirmation hearing for Senator Mullen out of Oklahoma for DHS secretary, the grilling of the CIA, FBI, and DNI directors over the Iran military engagement, and the Democrats trying to insinuate that we went recklessly into war and started bombing without any proper intel, and that President Trump didn't seek the counsel of his advisors. These people will leverage anything, even a successful removal of the world's number one sponsor of global terror, anything to diminish the MAGA movement. It's pathetic. Our guest this morning is Cleta Mitchell. Cleta, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Cleta is a friend of ours in Moore County here, obviously. Also, more importantly, and germane to this topic, founder and chairman of the Election Integrity Network, as well as a senior legal counsel with the conservative, a senior legal fellow at the Conservative Partnership Institute. The big topic right now, it would be a really big topic if there wasn't so many other things going on in the world, you know, like a conflict in Iran and the like. But the future of the Save America Act is very much in play right now. Finally, Senator John Thune decided to go ahead and make the members of his august body return to being a deliberative body, and they have actually gone to the floor of the Senate to begin debating back and forth on the merits of the act, which, to quickly summarize, requires the most fundamental things you would imagine when it comes to voting, which is proof that you are a U.S. citizen and that you can produce a valid photo ID in order to vote. So, Cleta, this week we've seen some of the Democrats step up and try to defend the indefensible. Where do you think this process is going to lead?
Well, we don't know. And but the thing that has been unfortunate over the last, I would say, 20 years is that the Senate has stopped legislating. They don't put things on, they don't put bills on the floor unless they know in advance exactly what's going to happen. And that is a very lazy and really unfortunate practice that the Senate has gotten in the habit of doing. And it was not that way for the first, say, 230 years of the country's existence. So, but the last 15 to 20 years, that's been the practice. So we pushed very hard, citizens all over the country pushed very, very hard to get Senator Thune to put the Save America Act on the floor of the U.S. Senate and just start debating it. Now, what they kept saying, they've done is they've taken this position, which is not in the Constitution, and that is that you have to be able to break the filibuster. Well, it used to be that there were not that many filibusters, that you didn't band together and require a supermajority to pass any legislation. That is not the way the Senate has done business for most of its existence. That's why the U.S. Senate has been called the world's greatest deliberative body, because they would put measures on the floor, people would talk about them, they would entertain amendments, and they would basically work through the legislative process. That's called legislating. Their muscle memory to do that has completely atrophied. So when the president and the State of the Union called for passage by the Senate of the Save America Act, which, as you point out, it would require documentary proof of citizenship for people to register to vote. It would require that you'd have to show a photo ID when you vote, and no matter what method of voting, whether in person or by mail, you would still have to show your photo ID, and it would define what is an acceptable ID for voting purposes, something North Carolina should undertake. since the people of this state have worked really hard for a long time to get voter ID. And then when I looked at the list of IDs that are acceptable, I wanted to scream because there's so many things that are accepted for a voter ID that should never be accepted for voting, like a student ID.
Yes.
You don't have to be a citizen to get a student ID. You don't have to be a resident of the state to get a student ID.
Yeah.
So, but that's in the bill. And then the third thing is to require every state to run its voter rolls against the Department of Homeland Security's SAVE system, which could identify any non-citizens and dead people and others that shouldn't be on the voter rolls, and give a report back to the state saying, here are people who are potentially non-citizens. Find out, you know, and then that would target who the state election officials would need to contact to say, we've been unable to make a match. Can you bring your documents to prove that you're a citizen so you can remain on the rolls? Now, this is a process that should not be controversial, but it took a lot of pressure on the Senate Republican leadership, Senator Thune, to bring the bill to the floor. But he finally agreed to do that. And that started this past Tuesday, where he moved to bring the bill. And it has, the Save America Act has been on the floor for the last, this is the third day. Today is Thursday. I think this is going to be, this interview will be on Saturday, be disseminated. We don't know yet whether there will be, whether the Senate will be in session tomorrow. But look, one big happening is that usually the Senate is finished by noon on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
They work 2.5 days a week. You know, so when they say, oh, we have so much to do, we don't have time to take up the Save America Act. Really? You guys work 2.5 days a week? That doesn't seem like an overwhelming schedule. But we don't know whether they'll be in session on Friday. But the point is that they are now, it's now on the floor. The people are starting to, Republican members of the Senate are starting to discuss. I've really seen a sea change just in the last 3 days as they're having to defend the proposal and have to talk about it. The president has been consistent. President Trump has said he wants this passed. He wants to add in a prohibition on all mail voting and voting by mail without a reason or an excuse. That's what absentee voting used to be. If you were unable to get to the polls to vote in person, you would vote by mail because you would request a ballot. You'd have to say why you couldn't get to the polls on election day or in early voting. So he wants that, and he wants to include two other provisions that don't have anything to do with voting, but which are important to the American people. And one of those is to say no men in women's sports, and the other provision is to say no transgender mutilation of minors, these surgical mutilations that are occurring that are just unconscionable.
Well, that would save America to a great degree, in addition to the voting provision. So that is I think it belongs in there. And, you know, the turning point in this, I believe, was really the fact that there's such overwhelming support by the American public to have these provisions in place. And eventually they started burning up the Senate phone lines, and I think the public will shifted this as much as anything.
No, there's no question about that, because Senator Thune came out on a Tuesday to their weekly Republican lunch that the Republican senators have, and he basically said, you know, we're just going to put this bill behind us, and we don't have the votes, and we're not going to try. And I mean, that the immediate outpouring of public response and pressure over the next 24 hours was stunning. And I think it really stunned every Republican senator. It was massive. And people said, no, oh, no, you're not going to, if you do that, we're done. You know, and I think they realized that was going to be a huge problem for Republicans in November. And look, I think that these Republican candidates need to be talking about the importance. I think Michael Whatley needs to be talking about this and making a big deal about this. And you know, it's not helping him for Senator Tom Tillis to be one of the people fighting fighting the base, fighting the Trump voters, fighting the Republican Party essential voters. If those voters don't show up in November, none of our candidates can win. And so I think it's really important for Tom Tillis to look around and realize that he is not helping us keep his Senate seat. So, but it was the people rising up on and in social media and calls and emails and texts. It made a big difference, and they've changed. They did a 180, and now they are working on the bill. You know, this is not in John Thune's comfort zone, but we just have to keep pushing and pushing.
And
eventually they'll figure something out. I think that they will figure something out. I do.
That's kind of what they're there to do. Well, and you referenced Senator Tom Tillis, our lame duck North Carolina senator. Not only is he indifferent toward this legislation, he went so far as to call it a waste of time, and he ridiculed fellow Republicans for what he described as trying to swing for the fences to get this done.
Yes, that's what we're doing. We're swinging for the fences, and we actually think that that's an important thing to do. You know what? It's just insane. And that's one of the things I posted on social media last week, a picture of Mount Rushmore. And, you know, I said that John Thune grew up in the shadow of these great American men. Did they insist on knowing what the outcome was going to be before they did anything? No, they did not. And, you know, our country would not have been born in the first place. It wouldn't have survived 250 years if this timid attitude had prevailed. We wouldn't be here in America, the greatest country in the history of the world. So, you know, I just think it's embarrassing. Tom Tillis's legacy, he's just shredding any legacy of pride and statesmanship and leadership. It's very sad to me. Yeah, I don't know why somebody would do that.
Yeah, he seems to be just marinating in his own irrelevance. And then anytime he gets a camera and a microphone in front of him, he can't wait to be the contrarian, the one who has a better idea or who disagrees with, 80% of his constituents. It's very strange. Suicidal.
Well, you know, one of the things that was I think really pounded him and went viral, millions of views, was when he said, when Thune said, and it was echoed by Tillis and just what you quoted his saying last week or this week, that they didn't have time to work on this and it was a waste of time. And so when they said they didn't have time, then, you know, that was one of Thune's statements 2 weeks ago. And the next day, guess what they spent all day doing? They had a dog parade, a Senate dog parade. And Guess who was the leader of that?
Yeah.
Tom Tillis.
the master hound. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm sure that was a good use of their time and our taxpayer dollars.
So. And our tax money, right. But they don't have time to talk about how to secure our elections. But they've got time to have a dog parade, a Mardi Gras dog parade.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it. I really am. Now, another big headline recently in the voter integrity universe came out of Fulton County, Georgia. And again, there's so much, in Trump 2.0, there's so much going on every week. It's like coming out of a fire hose from every direction, and not the least of which is, what's going on halfway around the world in Iran. But this story in Fulton County, where the FBI goes in and seizes these long ago forgotten ballots, we didn't forget about them, but the other side was hoping that we would. So that was a big story, and how do you think that's going to evolve from here?
Well, that's a good question. What happened is that there's a federal statute, the Federal Election Records Act, that requires that all election-related materials have to be retained by the jurisdiction for 22 months. But there was a legal action filed in December of 20, 2020 by a group of people in Georgia, and they sought and received a court order that all of the election materials in the state of Georgia were to be actually, I think that it was, well, I can't remember what it's Fulton County or the whole state, but anyway, that they would to be retained until a disposition by the court of the litigation. That litigation, because, and they got that court order in on January 6th, interestingly, of 2021, they got the court to enter an order that all of the ballots, all the materials had to be preserved. Now, we do know that thanks to the terrible person of Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, that he led an effort where a lot of counties destroyed materials, even well below, before the statutory deadline. They were gone within months or weeks of the election, which was illegal. Of course, they've never been punished, but
never.
But the Fulton County materials were preserved. They have been under the jurisdiction of the court clerk of Fulton County, the state. It's a state position, not a federal position, but and it's the county court clerk, you know, that runs for person who runs for court clerk and gets elected. And so that person has had jurisdiction over the ballots and all the other materials since 2020. And the FBI got a search warrant the end of January and went in and seized all the ballots, all the materials. There were over 700 boxes of materials. There's some effort now to try to ascertain if there is a discrepancy between the number of boxes that were supposed to be there and the number that were actually seized. And that, I think, is still ongoing. But the result of that has been that the county commissioners and the county election board have filed a suit. And they've hired these high-priced left-wing Democrat lawyers to come in and represent them to sue the FBI to try to get an order returning the ballots and all the materials so that they can destroy them. They tried 2 years ago to get an order to destroy the ballots. Fortunately, that was denied. But they're trying to get them back so they can destroy them because they don't want anybody to look at them. They specifically do not want anybody to look at the absentee ballots. And the reason is because there are certain things that we cannot know unless we actually see the ballots, the original ballots. These are things you cannot know from looking at the images. And a lot of there was discovery that had started in another case 3 years ago. Gosh, let's see, 2021. Almost 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago, but that just that it was proceeding and the ballot images had been made and they were starting to look at those. And then the judge decided one day, oh, that the plaintiffs didn't have standing. So that case has been, you know, appealed to the state Supreme Court. Well, yes, they did have standing. And then, you know, coming back to the county to try to get it completed. And in any event, one of the things that we know, we kept hearing complaints after the election 2020. I was one of President Trump's volunteer attorneys in Georgia in 2020, and I spent all that time in Fulton County. And one of the allegations that we made in our election contest, where we never got a judge appointed to hear the case, but one of the allegations was that there were what observers call pristine ballots, ballots that had never been folded. And these were treated as absentee ballots. Well, in Georgia, you can't, you know, you have to fold any absentee ballot and put it in a specific envelope. It cannot be delivered without the envelope. And so we kept hearing reports that there were all these ballots that had never been folded and they were being processed and they were counted and nobody knows where they came from. They had no provenance. They had no chain of custody. Where did these ballots come from? And so it's really important that those ballots be inspected by people who know what they're looking for and who know what the situation is and why that matters. And so So that's why the absentee ballots are so important and why the originals are important, because we need to see the markings. We need somebody to see whether or not they were folded. And we need to know what the custody chain of custody is for every one of those ballots. And what we do know is that Fulton County ordered over 1 million new absentee ballots on October 16th of 2020, which was after the deadline for even sending out absentee ballots.
How convenient.
So nobody knows why they did that. And they were ordered without envelopes. So why would you order more absentee ballots to be printed without envelopes? And they were ordered and they did not have what is called the stubs, which you have to have for the chain of custody. And so there are a lot of really strange things that went on with Fulton County with regard to the absentee ballots, in addition to not verifying the signatures. And so what you have is a situation there where you have 22,356, something like that. It's just over 22,000 absentee ballots that were counted and included in the total for Fulton County, the vote totals for Fulton County. And there are just over 20,000 more ballots than there are voters who are identified as having requested an absentee ballot. Now, remember, President Trump only lost the state of Georgia by 11,779 votes. So where did these 22,356 ballots come from that have no voters tied to them? So that's just one area. There is a report that was done by a really thorough researcher. It's a 264-page report of all of the errors, all the fraud, all the irregularities, and the failure to investigate. None of those things have been investigated. None of them. So,
people may ask the question, why are we talking about the 2020 election in 2026? Why can't we let it go? And you just made the important point there that we have the numbers tell us that Trump's margin of defeat was surely fraudulent, almost with certainty. So we're not going to go back and relitigate or change the outcome of the 2020 election, but we can certainly hold to account the people who thrive on that level of corruption and make sure that in the future this can't happen. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right?
That's the ultimate goal. That's right. We want the truth. I mean, there has been this massive gaslighting of the American people, this massive effort to silence those of us who dare to ask questions. But we want the truth. We need the truth. We need to know exactly what happened. So there are a dozen things that would come from that, you know, that you would, you know, all this, the only response by all of these people who've been gaslighting us for all these years, insisting that nothing to see here, nothing to see here. And then they wouldn't look at anything. They wouldn't investigate anything. So now what they say is that's already been litigated. None of it's been litigated.
Correct.
It's time to get to the truth. And so that's what's going on, is we need the truth for the truth's sake. Truth matters. And we need the truth instead of all of this shoving under the rug, attacking people, indicting people, trying to keep people from asking questions, getting to the bottom of it. But we also need it so that we can make sure that we change the election processes and procedures to ensure it never happens again. We need to know what happened so we can make sure it can never happen again. So it's really, really important that this is going on.
Cleta Mitchell, we thank you very much for joining us this morning, and we salute your tireless efforts to shine the light of transparency on both the what has happened in the past and what is to come with regard to voter integrity. And we hope you'll come back again and bring us up to speed on these topics in the future.
I'll be happy to do that, Steve. Thanks for all that you do. Appreciate it.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.